This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today we're starting a week-long series of programs dedicated to looking at Vermont's system of mental health care. We're going to tackle this issue from many angles, including the stigma associated with mental conditions, how families and caregivers are affected by a loved one's illness, how law enforcement officers are interacting with people suffering acute mental health issues, and at how schools address mental health within the student population. Today, we're going to talk about what many in the medical field say is a continuing crisis in Vermont's hospitals, the frequency of patients needing specialized mental health care being stuck in emergency rooms, sometimes for days on end, because there's no appropriate place for them to go. This has been a problem for several years, and yet it persists. We're going to look at why and if there's any likelihood of it getting better anytime soon. Dr. Louis Josephson, CEO of the Brattleboro Retreat, joins us from NPR Studios in Washington, where he's in town for meetings. Dr. Josephson, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Commissioner Melissa Bailey of the Department of Mental Health is with me here in our studio in Montpelier. Hello, Commissioner.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
And Dr. Liam Gannon, Medical Director of Emergency Services at Copley Hospital in Morrisville, is with us. Nice to have you with the program.
Thank you, Jane. Glad to be here.
And Dr. Gannon, I'd like to start with you and have you begin this conversation by describing how psychiatric cases are handled in your emergency department and what it's like for someone who comes to you in the midst of a psychiatric crisis and is in the emergency room.
Sure. Truly, the experience can be varied depending upon the presentation of the patient. We have patients that arrive who are seeking voluntary care for what may be severe depression or anxiety or even bipolar or schizophrenia, and they're there on a voluntary basis seeking care. We also have the other end of the spectrum where patients may be brought in against their will because of concerns by the community or law enforcement or their physician that they are at imminent risk to themselves or perhaps others. The experience for these patients is the one that seems to cause most of the anguish within the community at large because they are not in control of their own disposition, and they may not want to be in that care model. And they're typically brought into what we would call a safe room. Now, that's assuming that a safe room is available and not already occupied by another patient with similar condition. They will be asked to disrobe and be placed into paper scrubs to be sure that they do not have any implements by which they could harm themselves or others. And then an elaborate system of care that involves medical examination, search for other medical conditions that may be presenting as psychiatric conditions, toxicology screenings, and then the involvement of our very important crisis workers from the designated agencies. And then we work as a team to try to find the most appropriate immediate treatment in our emergency room, as well as the proper placement so that these patients can be treated in the most time-effective way.
And all of that seems like it's appropriate for an emergency room setting.
Very much so.
So the problem is then in how long it takes to get somebody into that more appropriate setting post-emergency room?
That's correct. Ideally, we would have an on-site psychiatrist, but many of the small critical access hospitals do not employ an on-site psychiatrist or have 24-hour access to a psychiatrist. So the ideal model would be to have a psychiatrist involved in that initial screening, but we feel comfortable with the initial screening of these patients and then trying to get them into more definitive care with a psychiatric team in the most appropriate environment as well, which an emergency room is not a great environment if you're having severe paranoia, severe depression, or severe anxiety.
Can you put Copley Hospital in context with some of the larger hospitals in our system and in our neighborhood, so UVM Medical Center, Dartmouth-Hitchcock?
Sure. Copley is, in many ways, your prototypical community hospital. We're what's termed a critical access hospital, so we have limited resources, and we're in a geographic area where we are the only resource for many of these patients. In our emergency room, we have 15 total beds spread out over 8 rooms. Our safe room is our only single bed room, and we do not have on-site security or anything of that sort. So when we have to watch these patients, we have to draw from other resources within the hospital, such as our custodial staff. I've gone into the emergency room where we've had three psychiatric holds, and in a small eight-room emergency room, that's a lot. And our whole custodial staff is working as sitters, which obviously impacts the hospital in meaningful ways.
Well, and you sometimes have sheriffs and other law enforcement officers that have to come in when a patient is deemed a potential harm to staff members and to him or herself, right?
Sure. And that is the case for the involuntary holds. They are offered sheriff services to assist the emergency rooms because at that point they are essentially in the care of the state, not in the care of the hospital. However, there is not enough sheriffs to go around for all of these individuals across the state. So we often go from a model where there are two sheriffs because they work in tandem outside the door of a patient, protecting both the patient and anyone else in the vicinity. And when they go off duty, we then replace those two sheriffs with a single custodian.
We're exploring the reasons today why people who go to the ER for treatment for an acute psychiatric issue are often stuck waiting for days before they can get into specialized treatment. We got a note from an anonymous listener who says, I was treated in a Vermont ER for 6 days involuntarily from December 2015 to January 2016. During the course of events, I was secluded multiple times and restrained in four-point restraints, injected with Haldol against the stated wishes of my advance directive, and kept in restraints despite being asleep or calm, again on multiple occasions. This was so immensely traumatizing that my advance directive now states that I am never to be taken to any emergency room at all, but that home care is to be arranged in the event of a psychiatric emergency. I would never risk being treated again or brutalized as I was in Vermont's system of emergency non-care. Now, I want to go over to Commissioner Bailey, but before I do, Dr. Gannon, I mean, that's a statement from somebody who felt that the care that they received in the emergency room wasn't very good either.
Right. And I have great sympathy for that individual. We get into this field because we care about patients. We care about all patients. And I'm on your show today, quite frankly, to advocate for this type of patient. We try our best to provide compassionate care to the extent that we are capable, and we're constantly trying to challenge ourselves as to how we can make both the environment better. We're currently undergoing some revisions. We work on de-escalation training and have recently hired a social worker at Copley to assist in this process. But I'm very much here and aligned with that patient. Because we do need to do better for Vermonters.
Commissioner Bailey, is there a standard for how long someone should be in an emergency room for psychiatric care?
No, there's not a standard, but there are some national guidelines that talk about for once a disposition is decided or what level of care an individual needs, looking at 4 hours as the length of time, although Joint Commission has chosen not to hold hospitals accountable to that because they recognize that this is a national issue with EDs experiencing long stays of individuals with psychiatric issues.
And do you have a sense of how frequently it is that Vermont patients are spending more than 4 hours in the emergency department?
I just want to add one piece of clarification. So for the Department of Mental Health, what we are notified about are individuals that are involuntary, individuals that are court ordered, individuals that are coming from corrections into emergency departments to be placed inpatient, and then individuals who are associated with a designated agency who are serious mentally ill individuals who are receiving a high level of care.
So basically, these are people who are interacting with the state in addition to the health care.
That's correct. And so there is a group of individuals that we are not notified about and that we do not currently have any statutory authority to know about. And that's what creates some of the struggle here of us having complete data about all of the stays at emergency departments. So we're notified about a portion of the population, and then there's an additional population. So when I report numbers such as the average has been about 60 hours over the last couple of months, that's only only for that group of individuals. So if we have voluntary individuals who may be waiting longer because they're not the priority for the number of involuntaries we have, we don't necessarily have that data. So that is one thing that we're working with the Vermont Hospital Association to really figure out how can we get a better sense of what the data is across all emergency departments and all levels of individuals.
But it sounds like for the numbers that you do have, you said 60 hours is typical for what people are spending in an emergency department, as opposed to the guideline, the best practices of 4 hours. And other people who perhaps are deemed either less acute or less of a risk may be spending even more time.
That's correct. And I do also want to clarify that we have also recognized that across the emergency departments, we don't necessarily have a common definition of what a border is or how long somebody is waiting. So I do think that that's another piece of the struggle that we need to work through so that we have a common way to collect that information. Yes, there are individuals we have about 50% of people that are spending 40 hours or less, and we have about 50% of the people spending 40 hours or more. So there's a mix. There's definitely a mix of length of stay.
Dr. Lewis Josephson is CEO of the Brattleboro Retreat. I'd like to bring you in here, and maybe you could continue or contextualize why it's so bad to spend 3 or 4 days in an emergency department for these patients.
Sure. I would like to say also, though, Melissa's last point about we don't know the exact time that people spend, and I think the Hospital Association is committed to making sure that we have better information. We still know that there are patients today who are waiting in emergency rooms around the state for days and weeks. And I just want to point out, as the doctor was saying before, as an advocate for people with mental health, it is unacceptable. If somebody was there with a cardiac or other condition and not getting to see a cardiologist in a timely way, we'd say it was unacceptable. And I just worry about the dialogue here in the state starting to become bureaucratic in the sense of measuring in days. We know it's not acceptable to have patients waiting for this length of time without receiving treatment, and we have to work really hard to do it. The reasons, I think, why we're backed up at this point are multiple.
Well, wait. I want to stop you because I appreciate what you're saying. And when you say this is unacceptable, explain why for people who say, look, an emergency room is a hospital setting. It's a good place to be. If you're having any kind of healthcare crisis, why is it so terrible to spend 4 days in the emergency department? So to this idea of this being totally unacceptable, before we get into the whys of why there's a backlog, what about why it's such a problem?
Well, it's a problem. If you think about yourself or your neighbor who goes to an emergency room with an upper respiratory infection or any sort of condition, and you're waiting for an hour, and you're waiting for 4 hours, and you're maybe seeing the doctor, and then you're waiting to get cleared to leave or be admitted to a bed, that waiting time is never pleasant. But to think about you're suicidal, you're delusional, you're psychotic, you're having feelings of hurting yourself or somebody else, to be there for hours may be acceptable. To be there for days and sometimes weeks, we've had patients who I've gotten calls from the Department of Mental Health in the past year who've said, I've got somebody in the emergency room for 2 weeks. And it's not acceptable for the patient receiving care. It's not acceptable for other patients who are coming into an emergency department expecting to be seen and treated. And it's also unfair to the staff of those emergency departments that aren't trained and the facilities aren't, frankly, always as safe as we would want them to be.
Dr. Gannon is a medical director of emergency services at Copley Hospital. And Dr. Gannon, we got a note from a listener who said, basically, look, if emergency departments aren't a good place for patients in psychiatric crisis to have to wait for 3 or 4 days, but that's the system we currently have, make the ERs a better place for those patients. Why is that not the solution?
I think it is part of the solution, and I'm actually part of a task force that is trying to work on this very issue as we try to sort out more longer-term solutions. And you know, we're trying to provide a safe space, a space that is as conducive to healing as possible. But I think Dr. Josephson was pointed to the fact that there really should be a collective outrage about this. If your loved one was in a traumatic accident or having a heart attack and the facility where they were did not have the resources, we know that those people are brought urgently, sometimes even helicoptered, to the facilities where the care is needed. But we're talking about people who have little voice, and they're the most vulnerable of our society. And if these were the folks that we more typically see for the other conditions mentioned, there'd be rioting in the streets.
Yeah, Commissioner Bailey, I see you wanted to speak here.
I do. Thank you. I want to second what Lewis said. We absolutely are concerned about the individual, so I don't at all want anything that I'm talking about data to come across as political, but we do need the information in order to advocate for the resources that we need. So we can't tell a couple of stories and be able to say this is what we need. So the only reason we're talking about data is really to get at the heart of what are the needs of individuals. At this point, Secretary Gobey has called together a large group of individuals to focus on identifying what those needs are.
And that's Al Gobey, the Secretary of Human Services.
Right, correct. So we're spending time, Lewis is part of a work group, that we're trying to identify what are the different pieces of this puzzle that are needed in order to unclog the emergency departments. It's not a, there's not one solution because we have, people are all different. They present with different needs. And so we do have a cadre of individuals who are older and are also exhibiting some dementia in addition to their mental health issues, and that creates a real challenge. And that's just one example. So part of our going through the data and really understanding what we're dealing with is also being able to identify what resources are best needed to meet the needs of individuals.
We're talking today about the fact that people are often stuck in emergency rooms for days while they wait for a bed to become available in a psychiatric treatment facility. You know, as we've heard just now, our guests today are saying no other medical condition is treated the way mental health conditions are. So we're exploring why there's such a problem, and we're going to be looking at what could be done about it. We know what the problem is now. As we come back, we're going to look at why. Where is the bottleneck? What is the problem in the system, or perhaps it's the system at large? You can share your questions or your experiences with emergency mental health care in Vermont. We got a note from Dr. Rick Barnett, who's a psychologist in Stowe, and writes, "Physicians and nurses, emergency department staff, are super vulnerable to compassion fatigue. Mental health patients, alcoholics, and drug addicts are often the most difficult for staff precisely because they don't have the expertise nor the resources. This leaves them frustrated and discouraged. Psychologist doctorates are experts in mental health assessment and treatment, but are prohibited from having hospital admitting privileges. Emergency departments across the state can contract with these experts to work with staff, patients, and others to deliver better care. All health providers must work together, but the medical system is biased towards a physical health care workforce with limited mental health education and training." More to come. Again, share your thoughts with us. You can also post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. You've probably heard that this month is all about podcasts, specifically introducing them to people who might not be listeners. It's called the Tripod Campaign, and here's how it works. Find a friend or a loved one who doesn't get this whole podcasting thing. Tell them about a show you think they'll love, and then show them how to subscribe and listen. Share your recommendation using the hashtag Tripod. That's T-R-Y, pod. That's it. You're done. Thanks. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today is the first day of a whole week of programming on Vermont Edition, looking at mental health care in Vermont. And we're starting talking about what happens when people access mental health care through the emergency room, and why there is a bottleneck when they try to get into more specialized treatment. We're joined today by three people who have patients at heart, but are saying this is not an easy problem to solve. Dr. Lewis Josephson, CEO of Brattleboro Retreat, Dr. Liam Gannon, Medical Director of Emergency Services at Copley Hospital in Morrisville, and Commissioner Melissa Bailey of the Department of Mental Health. And you can share your questions or your experiences, post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net, or you can email vermontedition@vpr.net. And let's go to John, who's calling in from Richmond. Hi, John. Go right ahead.
Hi. I just guess I have a question on how much of this might, what contributing factor might have been when the State Hospital in Waterbury was closed. If I remember correctly, the patient population was north of 50 patients, and yet we opened a new facility with 25 beds. These are inpatient, if I understand, which means that they require the most resources. And so if you don't have the capacity in the new facility, I would guess it pushes it down into the rest of the system. We don't have less need for services since that time. We have more. How much of this have we created ourselves? And ultimately, now that we're dealing with it, what's the solution?
Yeah, John, thanks for the question. I appreciate that. Commissioner Bailey, the closing of the state facility in Waterbury happened with Tropical Storm Irene when that facility was irreparably damaged. And the new facility does have fewer beds. This was part of a program that was designed to be more of a program where people were able to be in their own communities and there were more step-down beds. But to John's point of, is the problem that we have fewer beds for people who are in acute crisis?
So, John, thank you for your question. I actually had the same question when I stepped into this role as commissioner, really understanding what the bed capacity is. So we dug into it, and we did have 54 beds at the Vermont State Hospital, and we have 25 right now at Vermont Psychiatric Care Hospital. However, we also built some capacity at Rutland Regional and at the Brattleboro Retreat for what we call level one beds, which are those beds that are similar to the hospital beds that existed at the Vermont State Hospital. So we went from a total of 54 to a total of 45 of that same level one, if you will, beds, which includes, again, the Vermont Psychiatric Care Hospital, Brattleboro, and Rutland. In addition to that, we built a 7-bed temporary facility in Middlesex for what we call secure residential. Those are for those beds are for individuals that actually lived at Vermont State Hospital and were there for, you know, years on end, and probably need that level of care for the rest of their lives. So we do have a facility in Middlesex that is 7 beds. So the total is 52 compared to the 54. We currently have an RFP, that's a request for proposal, out to look and examine the capacity of potentially upping that 7 to 14, which would help with some of the bottleneck, because some of it is about individuals that get placed into level one beds, and then they're challenged to discharge because they need to be in a higher level of care in the community. So, the numbers are not significantly different, and we are looking to expand that. The overall number of hospital beds actually increased from 184 to 191. And we've worked with the VA down in White River Junction to expand their capacity so that we could get veterans to the right level of care in an inpatient setting. So I wouldn't say that I haven't quite identified that that's the issue, because we have the same capacity. We may need more, but I think that there's other things that are contributing to the issue right now.
Like what?
Again, as I mentioned, we have individuals that are older individuals or older Vermonters who have some dementia. We have some forensic needs that are challenging to find the right setting for. We don't have a forensic facility. We're the only state in the country that doesn't.
And this is for people who are in the criminal justice system.
Right, and need that level of care. And we just struggle with some different Vermont... We're unique, we're small, and that creates some capacity issues or economy of scale issues. So it's trying to figure out what those particular populations look like and getting the right facilities or community-based services built for them. And we also are struggling with our designated agencies. They have been really clear about their turnover rates. And as Liam had mentioned earlier, they're hiring, you know, younger individuals, or they're having trouble finding experienced individuals to work with some of the most challenging Vermonters.
And just for people who are unfamiliar with the designated agencies, that phrase, I mean, this came out of a federal mandate several decades ago, but basically is a way to provide psychological care within the communities. And the idea is that it's decentralized care. So it's not like a state hospital. It's that each community will have, each county or you know, sort of that size, will have an agency like Howard Center in Chittenden County, who many people may be familiar with, that can provide psychological and psychiatric care in an outpatient setting, sometimes in an inpatient setting, but mostly to be providing that care closer to where people are based. Dr. Josephson, where do you come at this issue of, you know, we know that people are waiting in hospitals. You've described this as completely unacceptable. So what needs to be dislodged to get people out of the emergency departments and into a more appropriate setting?
Yeah, thanks. And I don't want to be too hard on Melissa and Algo Bay, who have done a great job in their new leadership roles at AHS. I want to make sure, in terms of the unacceptable language, that we just don't get complacent and we have a healthy sense of urgency about finding solutions here, which I know Melissa and Al are committed to. Part of the issue here really is, as Melissa said, we are missing some blocks in the patient flow, different levels of care, whether it's forensics or elder folks. But I do wonder about if we can't be more efficient and more effective with existing resources that exist at the designated agencies and within our hospitals. I can tell you at the Brattleboro Retreat, we are more than just a psychiatric hospital. We are kind of a mini psychiatric system, and we've become that over the years because we're the only child and adolescent inpatient psychiatric beds in the state. But we saw the need for residential care so we can move our kids out of the hospital, and we now have residential care facilities. We have partial hospitalization programs, which help people step down and out of the hospital. We stood those programs up on our own over many years to try to meet the different levels of care that are needed. So I'm looking forward to the AHS work group in terms of patient flow and seeing if we can more efficiently use the services that we have, make sure that DAs and other organizations are taking patients in a timely way, holding us all more accountable. And I would actually throw this to Melissa, saying that we need a very robust Department of Mental Health in the state of Vermont that has that air traffic control function that can really help steer patients to the right level of care right now with the existing resources we have today.
So Dr. Josephson, the resources are there. It's just how the flow is working that's the problem?
Well, we could always have more resources. Believe me, if we had a great windfall of money, I'd be the first person to talk about reinvesting in our mental health and addiction system. There's no question we could always use more resources. I don't know where legislatively that money's going to come from in the state of Vermont in the existing circumstances that we have now, with maybe more potential cuts from the federal government as well to our Medicaid system. So I think we really need to look at what we've got on the table now. And if we get some extra resources, that's gravy. It would be wonderful. But I do think there's air that we can push out of the system now, and we can all just commit ourselves to getting patients to the right place today with what we have.
Let's go to Phil, who's calling in from White River Junction. Hi, Phil. Go right ahead.
Hi. First of all, I want to say thank you to everybody for taking on this topic. My experience has basically been I had a friend who was in crisis, and I was trying to help them get some mental health counseling. And I ended up calling six different providers, both physicians, psychiatrists, and mental health workers. And four of them were no longer taking new patients. Two of them never even bothered to call me back. And I would disagree with that physician. I think that we need to have more resources. Again, I agree. I don't know where the money would come from. But has anybody looked at graduating rates of psychiatrists from medical school or, you know, from residency programs? And are we doing enough to attract high-quality people in Vermont?
Thanks for your call, Phil. I appreciate that. Dr. Gannon, you mentioned that you wish you had a psychiatrist on staff in the emergency department who could assess patients as they come in, but that's not really feasible for a small community hospital like that. And here's Phil saying, is the problem that we don't have enough psychiatrists coming into the system?
I think that is one of the problems. We certainly would be well served to have more psychiatrists within the state. And I would agree with the caller that we could certainly use more resources in addition to continuing to try to improve and work on our current set of resources. But if it sounds to me like today, both in the community call-ins as well as this panel, we've acknowledged that this problem exists. And once you acknowledge that a problem exists like this, I think it's very much incumbent upon us, the workers themselves, the administrators, the legislators, to come up with a fix. It's been an issue, as folks have said, for the past several years, and I don't think anybody wants to go back to the facility that was at the Waterbury facility that was destroyed by Irene. We want better than that for our Vermonters. But we've now acknowledged the problem, and I think we want to have a task force to get together to fix it.
But haven't we been trying to do that since Tropical Storm Irene, since the closure of that facility? We built the new state facility. We've been talking about capacity. Commissioner Bailey mentioned that we have pretty much the same level of level one beds as we did before. So, I mean, this is not something that hasn't been illuminated. And, you know, I sense, Dr. Gannon, that perhaps you are not making as fine a point on the political system as you might be thinking about in your head.
I think that if we talk about the political system, I think that somewhat by virtue of mental health in general, we can easily see ourselves being involved in a car accident on I-89 or perhaps having a heart attack or perhaps one of these situations befalling a spouse or a child. It's harder for us to see ourselves having a psychotic break or being suicidal or so depressed that we want to kill ourselves. But once we get to the point where our legislators, our community members, and our physicians can see that this too could happen to them or their loved one, we become invested in a way that we commit ourselves to this process with real vigor. I'm encouraged that the current administration recognizes that there are challenges within the system, and I'm hearing a commitment that they're ready to help us solve them.
Commissioner Bailey, I'll come back to you in just a moment because I know I want to give you a chance to talk about this, but we have a lot of listeners who are also hoping to weigh in here today. Jennifer's calling in from Middlebury. Hi, Jennifer. Your thoughts.
Hi. So I recently had a mental breakdown in November and self-admitted myself into the Brattleboro retreat. The experience there at the OB, the Osgood 2, was a very good experience, and I commend them. Then I was transferred down into the Birches. I spent well over 6 weeks in the program due to my post-traumatic stress, which was not due to a car accident, which was not due to someone in my family dying. It was actually due to witnessing a human being being run over and killed. Now my problem is that I would like to know how in a very rural community is the opportunity for someone who is still struggling and working hard every day with the tools and the coping skills that I worked really hard getting at the Birches program, how am I supposed to continue treatment when there isn't anything in my community that I can't travel? I can't travel distance. I can't travel to Chittenden County. I can't travel to Rutland County. Addison County is my place, and there's nothing. I'm not a dual diagnosis. I am simply a mental illness PTSD person. And I want to know what is in plans? Is there a place, something going to be happening soon?
Jennifer, when you say there's nothing for me, do you mean you can't find a psychologist or a psychiatrist, or there isn't a more robust program?
There's no robust programs. You know, prolonged exposure is what helped me through. There's no support groups. I'm trying to make one with my own friends that I've made at the retreat just by video chatting, because they're also in the same predicaments in other states. And I think a lot of people are really struggling, and it's very difficult when you're suicide thoughts, deep depression,
Yeah, Jennifer,
I
appreciate you calling in, and I appreciate you sharing your story. And I wanted to read another listener's comment that we got that has some similarities to yours, and a person who writes, "In my experience as a former psychiatric patient who utilized community emergency rooms for psychiatric crises, a large issue, particularly in rural areas, is the lack of intermediate care. When there is nothing between outpatient therapy and inpatient hospitalization, people are forced to wait for treatment until they are in crisis. Additionally, intermediate levels of care are not always covered by insurance providers." So, Commissioner Bailey, what about that? I mean, here are two people who say, gosh, I really need this support and I can't find it in my community.
Right. It is definitely a challenge of Vermont, and we hear this from other rural states as well, the challenge of finding experienced practitioners. I think one of the things that the first caller talked about was FaceTiming with others. And it's interesting, as you were saying that, I was thinking about the increase in telepsych that we've been trying to do and increase in telecounseling to try to reach those areas that are under-resourced. We're constantly thinking about and learning about new ways to get those services to individuals, but it is absolutely a real challenge. And I will say I need to acknowledge your persistence. I think that that's really impressive that you've continued to seek out that care.
Yeah. Dr. Josephson, what about from your perspective?
Yeah, and I would agree there are shortages out there, and I think that's our real challenge, because if somebody like this was getting some care and is feeling a little better coming out of the retreat and they don't have a community system or individual practitioners that can support them, they will bounce back to the retreat, which is the most expensive, highest level of care. And when they're bouncing back, that means somebody is in an emergency room who we can't admit, who's more acute and needs to be in there. So I think that lower level of care, that sort of intermediate level of care, is a critical issue. I applaud Melissa for the telepsych. We are also at the retreat standing up our own use of telepsych and also looking to support some emergency departments in our local area with that. So we've got to be creative to come up with ways to support patients. But it's really hard for me to hear because this last story, because, you know, I one hand, I feel really great that we were able to be helpful to this person. On the other hand, I just worry about her not getting her needs met and then coming back in all over again, which is just not a good use of all of our resources.
Yeah, we got a similar comment from Connie, who writes about this need for long-term permanent housing for people with chronic mental health challenges. And she also reiterates that people bounce back to the ER if they don't have this, mentions a small program run by Howard Center in Essex Junction for individuals who have their own apartments. And she says, this is supportive housing that allows people like my son, who has bounced around in over a dozen short-term facilities through the years, to have a safe, permanent place to call their own. The state needs to duplicate this program all over the state, as it is a much more cost-effective way to address this need. Commissioner Melissa Bailey of the Health Department, the Department of Mental Health, is sticking with us here as we continue this conversation. But I want to thank Dr. Louis Josephson, CEO of the Brattleboro Retreat. Dr. Josephson, thank you very much for being on the program today.
Thanks. It was a pleasure.
And Dr. Liam Gannon, Medical Director of Emergency Services at Copley Hospital in Morrisville. Thank you very much as well.
Glad to be here. Thank you for the show.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. All this week, Vermont Edition is focusing on mental health care in the state. We'll be looking at how families and caregivers cope, how the police interact with people who are suffering from mental health issues, and how the school system deals with children who have mental health conditions. Melissa Bailey is the new commissioner of the Department of Mental Health, and she is still with us now to expand our conversation a little bit to look at Vermont's system at large and her goals for the department. And we're still hearing from some of you as well. Let's get a call in here from Craig in Bristol. Hi, Craig. Go right ahead.
Hi, Jane. Craig. I fear, Jane, that the Department of Mental Health simply is not being held accountable. It's been obvious since the Waterbury Hospital was flooded out, the issue, why is there no common definition in place and being audited with the hospitals? They go through the Green Mountain Care Board. This should have happened previously. It's an issue with even accounting for different stuff, using different definitions. The emergency room data should be part of the annual budgets that are going through the Green Mountain Care Board. The fact that the department's stalling again, it's asking for data. This data was known to be needed years ago, and no one is forced, you know, if you have to force the hospitals to do it, you've got the Green Mountain Care Board process. This is nuts.
Greg, thank you for your comment. And let me remind people who may not have been listening to the very beginning of the show that one of the things that we were talking about was this question of how long are people waiting in emergency departments before they can get into specialized treatment. And Commissioner Bailey was saying that the state knows about patients who are sort of in the state system, either they're in the prison system, or they're in some form of care where the state is in charge of them, or they're significantly interacting with the state. And the Department of Mental Health does not necessarily know about patients who have admitted themselves or have been admitted by family members who aren't under state care, who are not being involuntarily admitted, under at which time they would be in state care. And she was saying that you don't necessarily have the statistics on how long everybody in healthcare is waiting. To Greg's point about, well, why not? Do we need this information in order to then make some changes or figure out a system that works? Why can't we get to that point and then get to a system that works?
It's a really good question. And we actually don't have any statutory or legal oversight of the emergency departments. And we have been working with them over the last couple of years to figure out the best way for them to get the data. And quite honestly, they admittedly so are a little reluctant to share data with the state that they're not required to share. They're protecting patient rights. They're saying, you know, why do you need to know that Joe Smith, who has nothing to do with the state and may have private insurance, why do you need to know that information? And it's a fair question. And I think we always struggle with the need to know dynamic and whether, you know, especially in a small state, how easy it is to find out things that we probably shouldn't find out. That's been an ongoing conversation. And since this most recent sort of attention to this issue, hospitals have been more willing to entertain the idea of what that could look like and how they could provide us some information without going into any details of who people are or more individual, you know, stories. So it's always this balance between the information and the data and people's right to privacy.
Let's get another call in from Xenia in Barrytown. Hi, Xenia. Thanks for waiting.
Hello. Going back to Dr. Gannon, that Copley said that they have folks take off all their clothes. This brings up the subject of psychological trauma, which most people with serious mental health needs have been sexually abused. And so it's counterproductive and countertherapeutic to have people strip. When I worked for a number of years in the crisis residence at Washington County Mental Health, and all the agencies should have a crisis residence of their own, but they're not well enough funded to do that. We asked people to empty their pockets and, you know, give us their coat, and we searched their stuff, and we apologized because it was intrusive, but it worked. I mean, sometimes people did bring in sharps. I remember one person, I searched her coat. It was one of these modern a million pockets, and I found 6 razor blades and cut myself, so I had to go through all those needle stick precautions. But that's something, you know, outpatient trauma counseling is largely not available, especially if someone doesn't have money.
Yeah, Xenia, I take your point, and I hear you, and it goes back to our discussion about the emergency department not necessarily being a very good place for people who have experienced this kind of trauma or who are feeling re-traumatized, and that emergency department experience from what the doctors are telling us really not serving them well in the aim of actually getting better and getting healthy. Commissioner Bailey, I want to ask you, in the time that we have left with you, you know, you're new to this position as commissioner of the Department of Mental Health, and your background is in pediatrics. We are going to talk later in this week about children and specifically looking at young people with mental health issues. But are there additional challenges in the area of pediatrics that dovetail with what we've been talking about today?
Absolutely. So we are also seeing children waiting in emergency departments. And again, it goes back to the last caller's point around trauma is really important. We as a department are looking more and more about understanding adverse childhood and adverse family experiences and the impact that they have on not just the child, but the family as a whole, and what we can do to address those needs in the community so they don't need to go into emergency departments. I heard one a psychiatrist once say that they were really concerned about or stayed up at night worrying about the people in the emergency departments. And my response is, I think we should also be worried about why they get there in the first place and what we can do to prevent that admission initially. And so that's another piece of this puzzle, is there are probably individuals that land in the emergency department because there aren't the other resources that are available. So we're digging into that. We're really understanding child and family needs and trying to provide the services for the kids and the families as well.
What are your goals as commissioner for the Department of Mental Health?
We're going to continue to expand understanding adverse childhood experiences, the social determinants and the impacts that those have on people's mental health, continue to work on healthcare reform and how mental health can be part of the larger conversation and not just an add-on piece of the discussion. And I think that we've done a really good job getting ourselves to that table and expressing how impactful mental health is on other health conditions. We continue to work on wellness activities for people that suffer serious mental illness so that they can be as healthy as possible. So it's not just treating, but it's also preventing and building resiliency skills. So those are some of the things that we're trying to focus on over the next chunk of time.
Is the system broken?
I wouldn't say the system's broken. I think that the system has some definite issues and concerns, and they're not new ones. They have built over time. And I think as people recognize the importance of mental health, that's where we've gotten a lot of attention. And that's a good thing. As Dr. Gannon had mentioned, we're acknowledging it, and I'm pleased to hear that.
That is Melissa Bailey, Commissioner of the Vermont Department of Mental Health. Thank you very much for speaking
with
us.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Our week of mental health coverage continues tomorrow, when we'll be focusing on the stigma surrounding mental health conditions and treatment. We'll talk about why mental health can be so hard to discuss and how shame and fear can get in the way of people getting help. Share your experiences with us by emailing vermontedition@vpr.net and join us live tomorrow at noon. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.